Can't you see it? A glistening 100-megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some. I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time. Turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding now. 5 hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to Jeffrey Wright and Company. My name is Jeffrey Wright. You can follow me on Twitter, on X, at JWright929ESPN. As always, you can listen on the radio dial 92.9 FM or 680 AM, but listen anytime, anywhere on the Odyssey app. Free to stream, free to download, listen on demand as well. Dennis Fuller's producing the program for us. Glad that he is with us. My company today, as he is on Thursdays, is of course a college basketball and football writer for CBS Sports on Twitter, on X, at David W. Cobb. Cobb, good day, sir.
Hey, good day, Jeffrey. Man, it's just nice to talk sports. Like when you got a little kid at home that may or may not be sick, like it's a nice diversion. Don't you realize, especially once you become a parent, like how much you need a diversion? In sports, there is no better diversion. And like maybe we spend too much of our lives talking about things that don't really matter, immersed in things that don't really matter. But at the same time, that's the beauty of sports, is that it gives us something to talk about other than like poopy diapers and the problems that we have in our lives.
Yeah, there's also this reality of like when your kid is sick, I think we've reached this day and age. You and I were talking about this a little bit before the show. Everything in society feels like wildly over litigated. And so it's not that you feel like doctors are lying or trying to take advantage. I just kind of always assume their general behavior has to be, I have to do whatever it is to not get sued. And so like, can you just tell me on the scale of 1 to 10, is this a 5? Is this a 9? Like what is this? But it's almost like, It's either a 1 or it's a 10. Like there's no in between in how they have to treat it. And then you throw in whatever your wife's going through mentally. And it's just like, I just want to know what should my appropriate level of fear or anxiety be? And I don't feel like I ever get that clear answer.
Yeah. And you know, for those of you out there deciding whether or not becoming a parent is something that you want to pursue, let me tell you, like, it's great. It's awesome. But the whole concept of like it adding gray hairs to your head, so true, man. I can see an increase in the gray already. And we were already kind of trending in a bad direction there. But I can see it just now, like looking at myself on the screen, like, holy smokes, like the hair is noticeably lighter than it was a month ago, pre-child. And like we are just 4 weeks and one day into this thing.
Yeah, to your point, I'm now like on the rotation of like you see your college friends, and obviously for me it's going to be a lot more difficult because I went to college like 3,000 miles away.
You went to the Notre Dame Church of Christ,
of course, at Pepperdine University, as everybody knows. You only see them like once a year, maybe like once every 2 years. Like this was kind of an unusual year where we had like two guys got married, so we saw each other two or three times.
And they're like, "Whoa, bro!"
Yeah, every single time they're like, "Whoa, Jeffrey." Looking gray. And I just always point out, whoa, at least I got it.
Hey, you got a nice salt and pepper thing going, though. You know, that's kind of the goal, right? You don't want to go straight gray. Like, I don't know if you've seen Chip Patterson, my colleague at CBS. No, I love Chip. Great dude. He's like in his late 30s, and he's like, man, he's like gray. But you've got the Just for Men
touch of gray
salt and pepper thing going, which is kind of, that's the goal.
Yeah, but I think, I want to say Chip's like 39. Mm-hmm. I think Chip's 3 years older than I am. But if you look at Chip at 36... Chip looks a lot like me at 36. And so that, like, the other thing that I love about Chip is, like, Chip's beard, it's like the side of his beard, like his chops are gray, but his goatee is still pretty black. And right. So, like, and dark. So he's got all that going. The truth is, the gray really doesn't bother me. Like, I assume if I were in a job that I was on TV, I assume that they would make me dye my hair. But since I'm not, like, I am the guy that even in, like, college, I had gray hairs. Like, it was just part of it. And so now it's just like, it gets progressively lighter, but I'm sure this is what everybody cares about today. So.
Well, you'd rather go gray than go bald. We can all agree.
Totally agree. 100%. Like, that's always my combo. Looking gray. Like, what's that up there? What's that?
Yeah, you didn't know. Your wife's been too afraid to tell you, but you have a massive bald spot, right?
So like, my this will be the last story on this. One of my roommates was... played on the basketball team. He was like 6'9" and handsome and cleaned up. Also married a former like pop star. Guy's exceptionally good looking. We had a wedding like 2 or 3 years ago, and we had this event to start the wedding, and I drove. It was in St. Louis. So everybody flew in except for the Memphis guys. Like, we drove up, and so we got in later, and this party's already going on, and it was like one of those double deck party decks or, you know, rooftop bars. And so you enter on the top. He's standing and congregating, like kind of holding court on the lower level.
Oh, and
I saw it. And I got up top, and my wife said, the look on my face when I saw that bald spot, she's like, I've never seen you so happy. It was like the Tom on Parks and Rec when they were like pan to the camera. And he's like so happy. that was me. It's like, that's all I had.
Yeah, but he got married before the bald
spot. I mean, he did it right. No,
you got to do that. You got to know, like, when it's time. Like, you got to cash in your chips, and you got to cash in your chips before you go bald.
No, it's. I mean, honestly, I credit Seth Hennigan. Seth just got engaged a couple of weeks ago, or maybe at this point, maybe like a month ago. That is a brilliant move, because we don't know if Seth's ever going to take another meaningful snap again. Like, this is...
he could be a great coach.
I was joking with Mark. I was like, how long is it before Seth's GA? Like, 8 months, 9 months?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because he's a coach's son.
Absolutely.
Were
you listening to the broadcast the other night?
They were gushing over him, man.
Also, speaking of Flo, did you see Seth's brother's hair?
Yeah, I did.
Like, he's surfer
a
hair.
Quarterback, too. Yeah, yeah. He's a little bit younger, but also he's named Quinn, which is the quintessential Texas quarterback name, to be named Quinn. I feel like I don't know how big he is or like what 24/7 thinks of him, but like Ryan ought to consider floating a PWO offer to that kid, because he's lighting it up. I think he's a little smaller than Seth, but he's lighting it up at Denton Ryan or wherever it is that the Hennigan boys play.
Yeah, they're all. I think the dad's the head coach at Denton Ryan, unless he moved. Like, that's where he was when Seth was playing. And I do think my favorite part of that story is Seth Wally pipped his brother. So his brother was the starting quarterback, got hurt. Seth came in and started playing well, and then all of a sudden, dad's like, yeah, we're going to stick with Seth.
Did you ever try that at MUS? What was it like, you and your brother?
No, if anything, my brother was going to Wally Pip me.
Oh, okay.
Because he was bigger, stronger, faster, like everything, smarter, like much better arm. That was never even an issue. That's kind of the other thing. It's like, we also... That was the only sport we ever played the same position.
Yeah.
Was football. And because baseball, I was a catcher. He was infield pitcher. I pitched like at like 14-year-old ball just because like I could throw strikes.
Dude, same here, man. Never had the velo. It was basically just like, it's our fourth game in 3 days. And like, yeah, okay, Cobb, your fastball tops out at about 59, but you can get it over the plate. There we go.
Yeah, I always remember like those showcases when they put like the radar gun on you. Like one time, like, I like maxed out and I topped it like 81, and then like I felt my arm go numb. I was like, well, that's just not going to happen. Like, it's like,
you see, did you see MLB release that study that was like,
oh my God, what a, no way. Okay, breaking news, everyone. I hope everybody's sitting down for this. It turns out if you throw as hard as you can every single pitch, it's bad for your arm. You will get injured. Yeah, no way.
Breaking news. Like, what?
Oh my God, the world is spinning.
That out. Yeah.
You know what Joe being insane about that? They spent money on that.
Oh, right. Like, well, but at the same time, it's like, why are we trusting leagues to commission medical studies? Like, because we've got the NBA doing their load management thing. And then also, what does the MLB stand to gain from this, like, very obvious scientific finding?
You want to just start here and go a little tinfoil hat?
Sure, yeah.
So I think what leagues are becoming more aware of, because if you look at it, let's use your NBA study example where they're trying to prove load management doesn't work. And I am with you. I do think most of these studies have like a predetermined outcome and they suit it that way.
Find the doctor to give you the result
that you want. But to publish the paper, you do have to do science. Like, it has to be a repeatable study. And so it doesn't mean that they're worthless, but I do agree with you. In general, they probably have a predetermined outcome. But my suspicion is the leagues know a huge problem that we have is, other than the NFL, our guys are not playing. And I think it actually makes sense that the two leagues that are most worried about it are baseball and basketball, because those guys have guaranteed contracts. In the NFL, you're largely playing to try and get as much of the money as possible. So the other leagues have guaranteed contracts. And so what I think they're doing is they're trying to, I also think Theo Epstein, who is largely involved with Major League Baseball in kind of the direction of the game, I do think he does not like the power era of throw it as hard as you can, throw sliders, everybody hit home runs. Because I think he's going to be instrumental in trying to get the strike zone. Because most people would argue the reason why we've developed into that was Questech, which was the balls and strikes system, which was basically umpires then were conditioned. You can miss a pitch high or low, but it's got to be on the plate. And so what that did was that made the strike zone longer but not wider. And so like when Maddox and those guys were getting, 6 inches off the plate, but they wouldn't get anything above the belt, it changed the strike zone. And so because of that, everyone just started doing the same arm slot, which is throw it as hard as you can, make everything look like a fastball, and it was fastball slider. And so I think what they're trying to do is they're trying to get away from that, trying to bring back some variety. And because if you're a hitter and you know, man, this guy's throwing 102, you gotta guess fastball. I mean, you know what I mean? Like, you gotta gear up and be ready to hit that. And so it makes sense. It's like, all right, at this point, it's like, well, it's either I'm hitting the fastball or I'm swinging through a slider. And so everyone just started gearing up and trying to. And so I think they want to bring back base running. They want to bring back hitting to contact, whatnot. And so I think that's all rooted in the same idea. And if it starts with, hey, man, it's not good if all of our pitchers are essentially like you've got like the rivalry countdown clock, but the countdown clock is, when is this guy going to have Tommy John surgery?
Yeah, no kidding. It's an epidemic. Great for Tommy John surgeons, maybe not great for baseball fans. But dude, I feel it in my shoulder too. So I worked up at game day baseball. You know, they're on Fisher Steel.
Oh yeah.
RIP Bogies. I don't know if you remember Bogies. Do you remember Bogies?
Cobb, I'm older than you.
Yeah, that's right. So they had that little pitch and putt course. You remember that?
Oh yeah.
At Bogies?
Yeah. One of my really good friends, his first time ever playing golf, he's kind of the guy that one of my other friends described him as. He's not the greatest athlete, but he's a B+ in everything that he does. First time playing golf, he hit a hole in one on that like 47 yarder on the first hole.
I have a very similar story about that. Very annoying. Hate it when people are so much better at things naturally than I ever will be when I try really hard.
At least it's not your two brothers.
bro, you're too hard on yourself.
No, I'm telling you, man, it's glaring when it's like you go like my youngest brother never really got into golf until like college, and then after it. And then all of a sudden, like, he's roasting it like 180 miles an hour ball speed. It's not fair.
That's annoying. Well, I worked up at game day, sophomore, junior, and senior year of high school, and one of my jobs was to operate the speed pitch machine, which they would set up outside under the portico to get the kids who were in town for the travel ball tournaments. Hey, come see how fast you can throw. Like, not everybody had a radar gun, you know, multiple radar guns per team at that, you know, in 2007 or 8 or whatever. And so my job would be to, like, promote the speed pitch. So I'd be up there throwing, and I was not warming up properly, but I was trying to, you know, show people what was going on and trying to sell. That's why they always put me on it, because I would, like, sell it to the kids. I'd be, hey, you want to see how fast you can throw? Like, you know, and so I would just get up there and be chucking. And so, you know, I'd
crow hop it. You got the power hop. Yeah.
Yeah, I'd be crow hopping from halfway down, you know, to the little fields or whatever. And but I definitely threw out my arm doing that. Like, I have had chronic shoulder issues for, like, the last 12 years. It's not so bad to where I can't play golf. And so I don't want to get it. I don't want to do anything to it, because it's like, I can still play golf. I just have to take Tylenol, use Icy Hot. But if I go under the knife and, like, something doesn't go right, then I might, like, it might be years before I could play golf again. So I just don't want to mess with it. But, like, if you look, my right shoulder sits, like, 6 inches lower than my left shoulder, because I jacked it up. Well, trying to throw hard.
The other problem, though, is, I mean, it's the Drew Brees conundrum. Shoulders. Hey, man, if that's, like, the labrum, like, that, we've gotten pretty good on most surgeries now. You come back, like, that's the one we really haven't figured out yet. Like, there's a reason why, like, everyone's like, well, if only Saban would have picked Brees. It's like, I don't know. I think at that time, most doctors would have said, hey, man, if you're asking me to bet on a quarterback with a bad knee versus a quarterback with a bad shoulder, I would take the quarterback with the bad knee.
The Saban thing's interesting, though, isn't it? In light of Bill Belichick's transition to college football, because it makes you wonder, like, well, Nick Saban was so great in college, why couldn't he work in the NFL? And, like, Bill Belichick's so great in the NFL, but will he work in college? And it's crazy to think that we could think so differently of Nick Saban had there been a different quarterback, you know, with him in Miami. I don't know. I thought about that the other day, because with Belichick, it's so, all of his success, not all of it, but, like, the overwhelming majority of it came with Tom Brady. And I don't know if you saw this, but UNC tried to get in on the John Mateer sweepstakes. Yep. John Mateer, the Washington State transfer, ends up at Oklahoma. He's going to be Oklahoma's starting quarterback. Well, North Carolina was 0-1.
Like, no way!
You know, right, exactly. And so, like, if North Carolina's trying to make strides and win 9 or 10 games next season, their quarterback dang sure better be somebody who hasn't yet entered the portal, because I don't know who they're going to go win 9 or 10 games with next season that's in the portal right now. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I suspect I'm going to go out on a limb, because one of the things that I thought Saban mentioned, or not, beg your pardon, that Belichick had mentioned, I think he mentioned it on McAfee. If not, I'm sorry, but I'm pretty sure it was on McAfee. Most of the agents representing the kids now are the same agents that represent the players. And it makes sense. Like, hey, you know, I'm going to make a little bit of money on them right now, and then if these guys end up being the best guys, like, I've got a 25-year relationship with him. Like, from a business perspective, but I would imagine Bill has a pretty good idea of who's at least going to be available.
Right, which is going to be interesting, isn't it? What happens with Jalen Milroe? What happens if Quinn Ewers says, nah, I don't want to go to the draft?
When?
Right? So it's interesting. You know, there could be some dominoes still to fall. Like, they're going like crazy in the portal right now. The quarterback thing is really, I mean, it's just outside of prepping for the college football playoff, which is literally starts tomorrow. I mean, the biggest story in college football right now is the quarterback movement on the portal. And I don't think we're done in terms of seeing high caliber, good quarterbacks jumping in. I still think there could be a couple who join the fray.
Oh, I suspect Quinn Ewers will not be the only playoff quarterback that goes in the portal.
Right, exactly. And, you know, you see it already. Bo Prabula back up at Penn State. He's not even playing with Penn State because he's looking for his next spot, even though he's a part of their offense. He literally plays for them almost every game, and they say, nah, I'm out. Yeah. Peace. I got to go find my next spot.
I know that's like the high talking point right now of, hey, we've got a playoff team with a guy transferring. I guess I just looked at it this way. When Drew Aller said he's coming back, what did everyone expect?
Well, yeah, but Preston Stone at SMU is doing the same thing. He got beat out by Kevin Jennings, but he's going to stick with SMU for the playoff. And it's like,
it also tells me one might have more options.
Possibly.
Or this. I'm willing to bet that Rhett Lashley, because I think Rhett Lashley benching Preston Stone, I think that hurt him on a personal level. I think he really likes the kid, and he knew he had to do it for the good of his team, because that's what he's paid to do. and you could talk me into, hey, they found some money to like smooth it over with Preston, like, hey, just hang in here for a little bit. Whereas Penn State's probably in the position of, we know they definitely recruited higher at a high school level, and so they might just kind of be out of money.
Well, and it could be a difference in head coaching philosophy as well.
Sure.
It could be a situation where James Franklin's saying, Bo Perbula, you want to transfer? Well, get out of here. You can't be part of it. I don't know this. But right, every coach has a different approach to players that want to transfer at this time of year. Some, like Kenny Dillingham, to his credit, man, I think it's awesome. You've probably seen the clips. But he's out there saying, yeah, we understand there's going to be guys on our roster who want to get in the transfer portal. Well, what we're going to do is we're going to help them find their next spot. And in the meantime, if any part of them still wants to be a part of our playoff run, we're going to allow that. As long as you're showing up on time, giving it your all in practice, and are devoted to what we're doing now, like, you can be in the portal. You can be looking for your next destination and still be a part of our team. And, you know, is that the same approach that a James Franklin has at Penn State? And then, you know, could Rhett Lashley kind of be in that Dillingham camp where it's like, all right, Preston, like, 100%, I love you, man. Hope you find a next landing spot. But like, hey, we might need you in this playoff. And so, you know, I think it's interesting seeing how these coaches are handling this, because the old school mindset would have been like, think about Saban circa 2008 to 2015. There's no way like somebody that hard line would have said, oh yeah, man, you can be in the portal and still play for us. Like, no way would a Nick Saban of 10 years ago have said something like that. And you still have a lot of that thinking in college football. But you look at Dillingham, a younger coach, saying, you know what, this is the world we live in. I understand some guys are going to be looking for a bigger bag or more playing time. That's great. Like, we're going to help them find that. In the meantime, you can be a part of what we're doing and try to help us win a natty.
I also wonder, I guess let's talk it out. I also wonder with Bo, if, hey, he already knows where he's going. And if, like, let's say, let's say he's going to Miami. Let's say he's going to Miami. We know Miami's going to need a transfer quarterback.
Yeah.
If you're Miami and you probably forked over seven figures for him, and you know all he does is run the goal line package and takes a bunch of hits, aren't you sitting there going, hey, man, why don't you come over here? Like, let's not rip a knee up. Let's not do that. You know what I mean? Like, I wonder if that's, and you could tell me Preston Stone has actually not found a home yet.
Or, hey, what about this? What if Bo Perbula is transferring to a team that is in the college football playoff? What if he's going to Indiana or something? You know, then it's like kind of awkward because you know where you're going. You're going to a school that your current team is going to be competing with for a national title. That could make... You know, the wires get crossed a little bit, but it's fascinating right now because these coaches are juggling so much. And it's interesting, isn't it? Because Michigan a year ago was so laser focused on the playoff, and Jim Harbaugh was so laser focused on NCAA issues and trying to get that NFL job they punted on their 2024 roster and paid the price for it. And so now you got these teams in the playoff where their coaches are so hyper focused on this game plan they got to put together for their college football playoff game that, you know, are the teams in the playoff actually penalized because of their inability at this point in the calendar to actually focus on building next season's roster? Meanwhile, you got 100 plus schools out there who aren't in the playoff. Sure, maybe some of them have a bowl game that they don't really care about, but those teams, they can focus on building their roster, recruiting the portal. Meanwhile, the teams that are in the playoff don't really have the luxury of focusing on their roster like you would. I think that's why you need more and more of a general manager type of presence in your college program nowadays.
From a calendar perspective, I can listen to the argument that if you're in the playoff, that you're penalized. I think, though, if we're looking at the entire operation, the entire spreadsheet, if you will, like, I don't think it's a coincidence that Greg Byrne sends out that give us more money thing yesterday. Because I think if you miss the playoff and you're one of those big programs, I think what you're going to see is a lot of fans that have been regularly giving. Most of the giving's month to month. You know, it's not like a lump sum thing. And so a lot of these people that are doing the math on, okay, well, we know we're going to have, let's say, $13 million in NIL money. Well, like, that's if everybody keeps giving. But, like, what happens if, hey, man, like, I was paying for the playoff. You didn't get to the playoff. And I saw the Florida game. I saw the Oklahoma game. Like, screw you. Like, I'm taking my money back. We're going to Destin. Like, you know what I mean? And so I think overall you're better off making the playoff because I think it's gonna keep people. I also think Michigan might be an interesting one. Obviously, you're going to have a fact, like the fact that that staff clearly, like, let's be real. Jim Harbaugh knew he was going to the NFL. Like, he wasn't going to deal with this. But I also wonder if there was a little bit of this going along for Michigan. Michigan kind of has always held itself, their money people, of the Michigan way, you know. I think it was beneficial for them to have this bad of a year because it motivated their people to be like, this can't happen again. Like, this is the world. Like, this is it. Like, seven. Like, it's also the thing of, like, they won the national title, and it's like, yeah, this is awesome. Like, let's keep doing this. Like, let's max this out. And so I wonder if having this year going that poorly at quarterback. Now, I also think this is true. I think they misidentified. I think they thought Alex Orji could play, and he couldn't.
So wrong. But to your point, the disaster, the dumpster fire, which was the Michigan offense, probably motivated their boosters to help make the Bryce Underwood signing possible, because they 100%. Flipped the hometown kid from LSU. He's probably going to start as a true freshman next season. I'm really interested, though. What does Michigan do? What does Memphis do? What do some of these other programs that have signed these stud quarterbacks, what do they do? Because we saw this year at Nebraska, when they started Dylan Raiola, right? Everybody's so excited about the year two step that Nebraska was going to make under Matt Rhule. But we talked about it all off season. You just can't, in this era, rely on a true freshman quarterback to elevate your program. And I hope Memphis fans understand that. I hope there is still a desire and ability from a financial standpoint for Memphis to go out and get somebody to compete with Antoine Hill, just like at Michigan. Same thing. Even though you signed Bryce Underwood, bring in somebody who can legitimately compete with him for the job, not long term. Like, obviously, you want Antoine Hill at Memphis to be your answer long term, but short term, maybe even just maybe by November, Antoine Hill's your starting quarterback and has made it obvious that DJ Lagway, than whatever 1 year rental that you go out and get. But it's just risky. Like, if Memphis goes into next season with Antoine Hill as its starting quarterback, you have to measure what you expect from next year's team. I don't think you can reasonably expect to lose Seth Hennigan, replace him with a true freshman, no matter how talented he is, and then say, oh yeah, we're going to win the AAC. I don't think that's realistic.
All right, so I think it's an interesting question, because I think what is happening is a lot of these guys are sitting there going, all right, I'm looking at the schools that I want to play at, and we know what they're going to do. Like, I mean, in the end, I suspect Oregon's quarterback is on someone else's roster this year for next year. Like, I my gut says it's Quinn Ewers, but I, you know what I mean? Like, it appears to me that Dan Lanning is very comfortable with that format, in which they just, hey, we'll recruit high school. It's not like they're ignoring high school recruiting, but it's like, our quarterback's coming from the portal. They seem to be very comfortable doing that, and they've had success with it, so I don't think you can really question it. But if you're one of these younger guys and it basically what a lot of these coaches are telling these guys, hey man, go to a MAC school, go to a Sun Belt school, go somewhere where you can play, and then we'll come get you. And so I think if you're Ryan, I mean, it depends on how good he is. I will say this, like, his highlight tape's great. I mean, I have no idea how good he is. I also think, is there even a top 50 defense in the American?
Probably not.
Who do you think got a better defense, Tulane or Memphis?
I would say statistically, Tulane probably ended up with a better defense. Defense wasn't Memphis's calling card, although, hey, they came up with a clutch turnover against West Virginia to seal the game.
Oh, don't forget the clutch turnover to start the game.
Yeah, okay, that whole sequence was wild. First, the sliding rule saved Memphis, because Garrett Green slid a couple of plays before when he should have dove. If he had dove, he would have gotten the first down, the clock would have stopped. He slid, the clock kept running, then he throws the interception. Memphis only retains possession because Herring slid, and he was into his slide before he lost the ball. That was wild. But no, I mean, I get your point. Like, in theory, Memphis should be so much more talented than anyone in the AAC that he could light him up.
If we're using SP Plus, Tulane was 73, Memphis was 78. I mean, I also think if you're Ryan, I think you kind of have to approach it like this. I think you are understanding Antoine's plan is to come to Memphis, play at Memphis, and then go somewhere else. But what if he winds up liking it? I mean, you know what I mean? Like, what if he gets a girlfriend? Like, what if, you know what I mean? Like, what if life happens and, like, he comes here, he likes it, and it's a good spot? Like, I think you have to just view it that way. I also think there's this reality of, are you better off? If you're Memphis, are you better off going in and spending money to go get kind of a bridge quarterback? Or, man, are you maybe better off going and seeing, like, hey, can we maybe get, like, a legitimate defensive lineman that can wreck it? Like, I mean, honestly, I know that they got more than just Walter Nolan and Princely at Ole Miss. But Ole Miss basically went from a god-awful defense to a very good defense by just spending, like, $5 million up front.
You're not going to say Princely's last name, Jeffrey?
Uiamalea.
Princely U, just like DZU. Yeah.
No, I can say Uiamalea. I don't know.
I get your point. You know, it's funny. Gabe still pronounces Nico's last name wrong. It makes me laugh every time. But, Uiamalea. Like, I get your point. Iamaliava, right? Gabe has a funny way of pronouncing it. But anyway, it's like, I get your point, but so much of what Memphis has built over the last decade has been predicated on the, and I talked about this with Connor a little bit yesterday, but the quarterback talent, the running back talent, the wide receiver talent. And it's almost like Memphis has established itself as a destination for players at those positions in a way that, as a transfer, I don't think you would contemplate Memphis as a defensive NFL factory in the way that you would as a highly talented skill player. You know, obviously it comes down to money, but if you got an equal offer from Memphis or a low to mid-tier Power Four program, and the money is the same, but then you look at Memphis and you see Anthony Miller and you see Tony Pollard and you see this great track record of quarterbacks, you think, okay, like, Memphis is a place where I can go and ball out. I don't think they have that reputation on the defensive side of the ball.
No,
I don't know
that
that would be feasible.
So we were talking about this yesterday, because obviously what to make of Memphis's season has been a topic. I hope you're sitting down for that. Because on the one hand, they went 11-2. Like, they played 13 games. They won 11 of them. Like, you can't sit there and snuff at it. But when you, like, go through and you look at how bad some of the teams were, you're kind of left going, like, you can't, to me, it's like, I kind of netted out, I thought my baseline for success this year was make the title game. Now, it turns out they fell victim to some of the things that a lot of SEC teams fell victim to, which is a much bigger league and unfair scheduling.
Yes.
Like, that's part of it. Now, part of it was Memphis's fault, because they requested a lighter home schedule to try and, thinking they were going to have their stadium finish on time, which would make them, I think, the first stadium in the history of the world finishing on time, so they could open it up next year. That was a mistake. I'm not relitigating that. But every single loss was the same thing. You scored enough, but you didn't. And where Memphis, I think, also deserves some credit, and where Silverfield deserves credit, and maybe this is becoming a new skill, he's done a pretty good job of maintaining and retaining the guys he wants to keep. Doesn't mean he bats 1,000, but I think that's impossible. But he has a pretty high batting average. Like, in the end, I imagine probably when Rock Taylor got dropped from Tennessee and winds up coming to Memphis, I don't think he thought he'd be playing at Memphis still. But he is.
Yeah, but you like it. You paid it. And to me, it seems like Memphis has placed a premium on those skill position guys.
Yeah, and
they're willing to pay up to keep them.
I think my strategy would be, on my skill guys, I'm looking for the Rock Taylors of the world. Those guys that are fringe, like SEC offers, and they're waiting, they don't get it. I think that would be my strategy on skill guys. And I think you just, man, I would spend some money to get some apps, to get one, just get the Ed Oliver. Like, in the end, how much of Tom Herman's career is just owed to Ed Oliver?
Sure. And hey, how about now, because of the Diego Pavia precedent, how about going and shopping in the JUCO ranks? Because these guys coming out of JUCO, you might get them for more than 2 years now. The precedent has been set in court that JUCO isn't going to count against your NCAA eligibility. You can go out and get a JUCO gym and theoretically have the guy for 3-4 years.
Well, now, this, also lays the groundwork for what I've really been waiting on.
Who's unlimited eligibility?
Who's going to sue to just say, if I'm a student in good standing, why am I not eligible? It's a non-compete. Yeah,
it's funny thinking about the possibilities there of, like Stetson Bennett, for instance. He could have played another season at Georgia because the JUCO year he spent at Jones down in Ellisville, Mississippi, wouldn't have counted against him, right? And so there's many examples.
Cam Newton could have played. Now, I mean, Cam was obviously going to go pro no matter what, but it's like Cam could have had another year.
Yeah, but think about some of like these dudes who come through Memphis basketball, like early Penny, late Tubby, like that kind of those kind of dudes. I can't remember like some of the names, but like they had some JUCO guys that could have played another season or two.
Yeah,
coming out of those ranks. And now, hey, think about this. I mean, no one will do this, but you could, in theory, go play 2 years of JUCO, get your associates, redshirt your first year at a Division I school, and then play 4 more years after that. Leave at age 25 with an associate's, a bachelor's, and a master's, right? Like, it's kind of insane, and then make NIL the whole time. Like, it's a pretty good deal. Like, if you want to go the JUCO route now, like, think about all the guys who at age 18 and at age 19 are just not physically there yet, who 2 years in a whatever, kind of a crappy JUCO weight room. But if you're eating protein and lifting somewhat regularly, like, you know, you just mature a little bit. And now all of a sudden you were an overlooked 3-star guy, but you spent 2 years at the JUCO. Now you're coming out as a 21-year-old guy who's got the physique and the frame to actually shine at the next level. Like, I'm curious to see if this makes JUCO more attractive to some
players. Well, I'll throw out another situation. What if you're one of these quarterbacks that you're kind of told, like, it's not necessarily like that they won't take you, but you know you're not going to play for a while. And instead of going to the MAC school, or instead of going to the why not go somewhere where your clock doesn't start?
For sure. I mean, it's always been last chance you, right?
Yeah.
The EMCC and Hutchison is, oh, well, you end up here if everything else went wrong. Well, it could be first chance you now. Prove it.
When I was covering recruiting, like, it used to be like, you know, there were schools that built their teams on junior college players. And then, like, kind of the late 90s, early 2000s, people just started figuring out how to get kids into school. Like, you know, they just figured it out. And so JUCO really took a hit. And so it was, to me, it was almost like if you were in JUCO, you were there for a reason. And it was usually never a good reason. Now, some of the California ones are a little different and whatnot. But for the most part, that's kind of how it was. And now, I mean, doesn't that, like, if I'm someone and I'm sitting there going, all right, I can start my clock and make $0 at Miami of Ohio, or I can go play for, you know, junior college national championship, not start my clock. Like, I think that becomes a legitimate decision now.
Yeah, I think the JUCO coaches should be pretty happy about this. It's going to make it easier for them to get and keep talent and to actually recruit guys that maybe don't have the character flags that your typical JUCO guy would have, because you have something to pitch to them now, which is, hey, you basically get 2 years of prep school. You could treat it like prep school almost.
Well, that was part of what was included in the decision, was the clock doesn't, if you go to prep school, the clock doesn't count. Like, that was included in the decision.
Right. And it makes sense. I mean, Diego Pavia went to New Mexico Military Institute. That's probably far more like a prep school experience. And you're not playing, except for in rare exceptions in basketball where, you know, maybe there might be a lower tier Southland Conference team that plays a JUCO or something, right? Like, you're not competing against NCAA sanctioned schools. So I kind of agree with the court's decision, but I'm with you, man. Like, I don't necessarily like what it says about where we're going, which could be an era where you're able to sue and challenge for unlimited eligibility. But it's great for Diego Pavia, because that man is not an NFL quarterback.
No.
But he's an awesome college quarterback. So he's going to make money playing college football in a way he never, ever will in the NFL.
All right, let's take a break. We got Grizz Warriors tonight. It's always a big one. We'll talk about it with Eric next, right here on Jeff Wright & Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. for millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
All right, guys, it's Jim Costa from Cash the Ticket, and if you're betting college football bowl games, and that can be a dicey endeavor, we're the podcast for you. We're releasing breakdowns for every matchup with new episodes dropping almost every day. Subscribe to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
That music means we welcome the Memphis Grizzlies Radio Network play-by-play announcer to the program, Grizzlies and Warriors tonight. Pre-game, 6:30. Tip off with Eric at 7 p.m. Grizzlies currently a 2-point favorite on the line. Eric, is this the biggest rivalry right now that the Grizzlies have?
It's either that or the Lakers. I mean, the way the Lakers and Grizzlies kind of go back and forth at each other, I think it is. I think the Draymond comments after the game in San Francisco set the tone and have for years. And you know, it's when you play teams in the playoffs and a lot of the guys are the same, that it kind of develops into that. So, yeah, I would say it's there for sure.
When you...
All right, Eric.
Sorry, go ahead.
I was going to ask you tonight. It looks like the Grizzlies are going to be without Jae Huff, which is going to be an interesting dynamic because it's only Zach Edey's second game back. We know that the Lakers are a good matchup for Zach Edey because he's performed so well against them. How do you sort of see Zach Edey fitting in against various opponents? Because it seems like he's a great matchup against some bigs, not as great of a matchup against others. Like what are the ideal conditions for us to continue to see Zach Edey thrive?
Well, I mean, I think you're talking about a guy who obviously is massive and clogs the middle. So what you don't want is a team that, like a Minnesota, who has Rudy Gobert to match that. Like, you don't want to match up per se, and slow tempo teams. Look, the Lakers played a really good game plan against the Grizzlies. I'm going to look for more of that moving forward. Teams are going to get that tape. The Warriors had a good defensive game plan when they hosted the Grizzlies in that first Emirates NBA Cup game and double team from different angles. You saw the Lakers really close out to the three, get the Grizzlies to drive and then collapse the paint. And then, honestly, the last game, I just felt like the Grizzlies also, sometimes it comes down to don't make shots. And Steve Kerr said it, a week or so ago, the NBA has never been a more make or miss league than it is now. If you're making shots, you got a chance. If you're not, you're going to get crushed. And the Grizzlies didn't necessarily get crushed in L.A., but they struggled in that game, and they struggled in San Francisco for the same reason. So Zach actually provided a great spark against the Lakers because of his size. And, you know, I look at a guy like Anthony Davis, who's a really good defensive player, and he had his hands full. So, you know, Draymond Green will do what he can to, you know, kind of beat up on Zach, I would imagine, or Jaren, and that's how he plays, is that physical bully-style defense, which it works. I mean, the guy's been one of the best defensive players in the league for years. So I'm looking for him to have just a really good opportunity to get some touches, get in the middle, use his size. I thought he didn't shoot it against the Lakers with as much confidence as he had been prior to the injury, just because you know, it's his first game back. So hopefully with this week where they got some extra work, he feels more comfortable and more confident, and he'll go out and do it well tonight. But yeah, anytime there's not another 7-1, 7-2 guy, I'm really looking forward to when he sees Victor Wembanyama for the first time, because Wemby's a little more mobile and is a little, you know, leaner in the frame, but he's not a pushover. But Zach's got him by like 40, 50 pounds. So is he going to be able to impose his will that way? So, you know, time will tell. I thought he did really well against Indiana, who's got Miles Turner, who's a good low post big. But he's proven that there's still a place in this league for guys that size.
Eric, maybe I'm trying to will this into existence, but
sure.
Is maybe listing Jaws questionable on the injury report, is that that's kind of winking at the camera, right? Right?
I never take any of that stuff for anything other than what they're saying. If he's got back soreness, then they're going to put it on there, and they have to. I mean, you can't just show up and go, oh, by the way, he's not playing. And, you know, look, it's you have a long stretch ahead of you. Tonight starts really one of the toughest stretches over the next handful of weeks for the Grizzlies in their season. They play tonight. They play in Atlanta, who's a good defensive team, on Saturday. They come back and play the Clippers, who have been a surprise. You know, when Norman Powell's been in the lineup, he's been fantastic. And then you go host Toronto, who's struggling right now. We all know they're in rebuild mode. But then you got second night of a back-to-back in New Orleans. And then it's that brutal stretch. OKC, Phoenix, Sacramento, Golden State on a back-to-back. Come back home, get Dallas. And then you have a couple days off, you play another home game, and then you go back on the road for four more. So I think right now, especially with how fast they play, every nagging soreness, bothersome, you know, pain in some part of your body is going to be really treated with kid gloves, so to speak. So I don't know if they're winking at the camera. I know if he can go, he'll go, because this is a matchup he wants to show out in. There's going to be a lot of eyes on this one. The Warriors are struggling a little bit. They're wavering a little bit in what their path is going to be. They went and made a move to replace De'Anthony Melton and got Dennis Schroeder. So that little dust up the other night against Brooklyn gets rehashed right away. And it'll be interesting to see for sure.
Have we ever had somebody return that quickly?
With another team? Man, I shudder to think off the top of my head. Certainly nothing.
Certainly
after,
not
like,
one
that
yeah, after a fight. Which I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know if your crowd mics picked it up, but the broadcast crowd, or sorry, the TV broadcast crowd mics, it was like Taylor was mic'd up on that.
Well, yeah, and I actually talked to Taylor prior to the Laker game about, I was like, man, what? You know, I kind of heard it, but I wanted to hear his side a little bit, and his side was fair. You know, he has a friendship with Jordy Fernandez, the Nets coach. And I think from my vantage point, I don't want to put words in Taylor's mouth by any stretch of the imagination, it looked like Taylor was going to defuse the situation where he knew Ja was John. And as I said on our broadcast, there's no one out there that can convince me that there wasn't something said in either the last matchup in Brooklyn or the one in Memphis that had Ja thinking about that, because the halftime one was the one where I went, okay, something's up. Ja's just not the guy that just goes to a coach and, you know, goes after him for no reason. And I've heard jawing at coaches in the past. Russell Westbrook once told Mark Iveroni he needed to get a timeout. He called a timeout. He scored again. He goes, you better take another one, and he took it again. Another player, Chris Paul.
By the way, can't believe that coaching career didn't work out.
Yeah, and then Chris Paul told him, if you keep going under the screen on me, I might get you fired tonight. You know, just basically talking trash. And that happens. Like, coach, you don't have anybody to hold me, that kind of stuff. That seemed a little more personal. And that's, for all the stuff Ja does, for all of his, you know, hyping it up and pounding his chest, which is great. It's what makes him a special player. I've never seen him do that. So to me, that said, okay, something was said. Something was yapped at him in Brooklyn or something, and so he's coming back. He puts this stuff, obviously, in the memory bank and went at it again at the end of the game. And as Jordy Fernandez, in my opinion, should have, he stood up and said, what are you doing? Like, knock it off. And Taylor went to defuse it, and Dennis Schroeder popped in with a comment and then grabbed Taylor's arm. And we've seen Taylor in the past protect his players you know, against Draymond Green, for example, and he's going to do that. And then players are going to go, what is he doing? Who does he think he is? I'm like, hey, the guy's been one of the better coaches in the league for the last 6 years. He's going to protect his guys. You talk to other coaches in the league, and he's got a lot of respect. Just because you don't necessarily have that utmost respect for him because it's only been 6 years and they haven't won a title doesn't mean that he doesn't have respect. So, yeah, it's the first time I remember a guy being in that situation and coming back so quickly with another team. So I'm interested to hear how the fans react when Dennis Schroeder is introduced in his first game as a Warrior. But, you know, there's things there that Dennis Schroeder has had a reputation in the past of being a guy that gets under people's skins, teammates, coaches, opposing players, opposing coaches. And obviously he showed that again.
If you had to set a Vegas prop of will there be a fight tonight, what's the number?
I would say no, just because guys don't fight.
Or let's say, you know, let's say a true like dust up,
like a skirmish. Like yeah. Guys get up and they're that's gonna happen.
Yeah, that feels like a free space, right?
I think it's like a -210 on that. Yeah. There's gonna be some intensity. The building's gonna be rocking. You know, Warriors fans travel to see their team. They are all around the country. They travel from San Francisco because ticket prices out there are so ridiculously expensive. A lot of times it's cheaper for people to go on a road trip and go see the Warriors play in other cities, and we get that a lot. You know, having grown up in that area and done some stuff with their, you know, talked on their radio network a few times, I've had people come up to us in FedEx Forum and go, hey, man, you grew up in Walnut Creek, right? And I'm like, how would you know that? Like, seriously. And he's like, oh, I heard you on, you know, their flagship. And I was like, okay, yeah, I sure did. Like, where are you from? And, you know, you try to be hospitable, but these two teams don't like each other. And it goes back to, you know, the playoff series, the Dylan Brooks foul on Gary Payton, the breaking the code. Now everybody goes after Steve Kerr when Draymond, quote-unquote, breaks the code. Mm-hmm. Their fans went after Rob Fisher. And, you know, I think I've told you the story where when we went out there after game two, we were kind of told, hey, you know, be careful walking around the town with your Grizzlies gear on because, you know, this is an intense battle. It's the semifinals. The winner going to the conference finals more than likely represents the West. So they knew what was on the line. And just walking to our hotel, which is walking distance from the arena, you know, I'm not thinking about it. I'm in my gear. I had lunch at my little spot, and then just cars driving by. Hey, buddy, F you, you know. I'm like, yeah, you're right, dude. I'm number one. Absolutely. Number one in your heart, too. I get it. And just I'm laughing. And, you know, some people were cool about it. Others are jerks. And there's people yelling at the hotels. And, yeah, that's part of it. That's what makes it fun. If you don't have rivalries, and I'll be honest with you guys, I like it when teams don't like each other.
Totally agree.
I get that these guys all grew up playing alongside one another, against one another when they were kids. I get the circuits, the EYBL, the AAU, all that stuff. I want guys to be more like Kobe was. And I was talking about this today with someone where he didn't want to be your friend. He wanted to hurt you. He didn't want to talk to people. At the end of it, he showed his respect. And one of the reasons why I grew to have even more respect for Kobe than I did when he was calling games was his last game when he walked by our table and I was talking into the microphone. He slapped the table and put his fist out, gave me a fist bump and said, thank you. And I was like, for what? And I'm like, thank you. And he basically did that with every announcer. But before that, if I was on fire next to Kobe Bryant and calling a game, I'm pretty sure he would have looked at somebody else and somebody else can get that because I ain't helping the other team. And that's how he was. And I like that. I don't want, you know, I don't mind guys being friends with each other, but I don't want guys, like, not wanting to beat the other guys. But I get it now. It's a different time. There's so much more money involved. There's so much more time that these guys spend together outside the game of basketball. But if you don't have that competitive drive and want to look at the opponent across to you like he's your lunch, then you're not, then to me, that's, you're missing something a little bit. You want to try to be the best. And to be the best, you got to beat the guy in front of you.
I'm kind of shook, Eric. You said somebody's coming after Rob Fisher. Their fans are chirping at Rob. Oh. Like, I mean, that
brutal.
That's not cool. Like, I want to know who that was so, like, we can go out there
You'd have to ask Cobb. You'd have to – I mean, Rob's got the full story, but he posted something, and, like, it was ugly. Like, it's honestly – and I know it's such a big part of our society. It's why I stay off of social media. It's why I go away, you know, and I tried it again a little bit this year, and everybody says, oh, it'll enhance your brand. And I look at them, I'm like, dude, I am 52 years old. Like, I've been doing this for a quarter century. I don't know how much more my brand get enhanced. You either like me or you don't like me, and I'm sure there's people on both sides of that fence. My main concern is, do my bosses like me? Do the players and coaches respect me? And do my colleagues like me? I don't necessarily put a whole lot of thought if a guy goes, I hate listening to you. Okay, well, then turn the channel. You know, that's fine. I'm not.